Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. We're continuing our conversation with George Throckmorton, and we're going to talk about that third bomb. Who was it intended for? Or was it a mistake? Was it a suicide attempt by Mark Hoffman? George Throckmorton will tell us more about that in our next episode. I hope you check it out. I also want to remind you to sign up for our Gospel Tangents Insiders Club. Go to tinyurl.com/GTInsider. We'll hold it as over a Google Hangout on July 17th at 6 p.m. Mountain Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll talk more about some of this, fooling a prophet for profit, and the Mark Hoffman bombings. Now back to our conversation.
Let's talk a little bit about the bomb that actually injured Hoffman. I know there was some things in the trunk of the car. I was just reading the book Salamander yesterday, trying to refresh my memory on some of these things. Why were police initially suspecting that Hoffman blew up himself, essentially?
Originally, they suspected Hoffman was doing something wrong because he was not telling a story that was consistent with the evidence. He mentioned that he had gone back to his car, and as he opened the door, the bomb fell out of the car and blew him up. The bomb that blew up Hoffman, we already had a representative from Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, ATF. They were out here because of the two bombs that had happened previous to this one. And so they were in town when this third bomb went off. And so they were at the scene. And these are the experts. Those are the experts on bombs. And they were examining the scene. And then when the investigator said that Hoffman had told him the bomb fell out of the car, he said, "That's not true. He's not telling you the truth." Well, when somebody's not telling you the truth, you wonder why. In looking in the trunk, they found some old documents that didn't matter. He was a legitimate examiner. Everybody knew that. But they also found some components of a pipe bomb in the trunk.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And later on, the investigation revealed that Hoffman had made the pipe bombs, and all of the previous two and this one was all made basically the same way. The switches that were used were purchased at Radio Shack. As the investigation continued, the investigators found where he had purchased these fuses, switches for the pipe bombs. And he really tried to hide it. I believe, and I can't remember for sure, it's been a long time, but this was what was reported to me by the investigators, that one of the switches was found in a Radio Shack at Wyoming. Another one was found in a Radio Shack in Colorado. He never bought them all at the same time. He spread himself out, and he used a different name. Back then, when you bought something at Radio Shack, they always asked your name. He put down the name of Mike Hansen. Ironically, in a shop in Colorado where he purchased something, I can't remember what it was, he was by Mike Hansen, and he wrote out a check to them. But on the check of Mike Hansen was found the fingerprint of Mark Hoffman. We thought we were looking for two different people at first.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But they found this is the same person. And again, this is an instance where the investigators never thought to process the check for fingerprints. And I said, having worked fingerprints in the state lab, I said, send it out to the state lab and ask them to process it for fingerprints. And they did, and they found the one fingerprint of Mark Hoffman on the check for Mike Hansen, so they knew it was the same person.
Oh, wow.
And then, as they went around, they found these switches had been purchased by Mike Hansen, so in effect, they were actually purchased by Mark Hoffman. So all of the bombs were made by the same person. Why were some of these bomb parts found in the trunk of the car? Why was Mark Hoffman lying? Later on, when they suspected that, they do a much more thorough investigation, and they found out there was a mercury switch, which simply means they used to use them a lot in light switches. They have two wires that are at the top, and they have mercury at the bottom, and when you turn it, the mercury will flow down, make a connection, and that's why it's called a mercury switch. So as long as you carry it upright, you can carry it around. They found Mark Hoffman was waiting to see somebody at the Crossroads Mall downtown. And at the time, he would meet this person on a specific day at a specific time. And Hoffman made this third bomb. He went down to Crossroads Mall. He parked his car up where the conference center is presently at. It's across the street from the old Deseret Gym. And he carried the bomb with him down to the mall. We know he was there for at least an hour and a half carrying the bomb because he had gone into a local store and made a purchase there, and it had the time on the receipt that was in his pocket. So we know he was there. And then I think what happened, and we have to speculate, but it seems pretty good. When this person didn't show up, then Hoffman left. He walked back up to his car, which was a low sports car. As he opened up the car door, he's still carrying the bomb. As he sits down in the seat and goes to put the bomb on the passenger seat, it hit the gear shift knob and caused it to tip, and it blew him out of the car. And that was totally contrary to what he said happened. So we know he was lying, and you start putting two and two together, and it comes up with some assumptions there. If he had got in the car and shut the door, he would have been blown to bits. Literally, he would have been blown to several pieces. But because the door was open, it blew off part of his kneecap and one of his fingers. And that means he was holding the bomb, and because it blew off part of his kneecap, that's where the explosion came after hitting the gear shift knob on the floor. Now, so, a side note on that, if you want, there were two construction workers that was having lunch, at least two. They were having lunch on the wall when the bomb went off. And they ran down and they noticed that Hoffman had temple garments on. And the one pulled out some oil, which he carried. It's a good thing about Mormons sometimes. They carry interesting things in their pockets. But anyway, and they blessed him and commanded him to live. And he did. I've often wondered, scientifically he lived because the door was not shut. Religiously speaking, he lived maybe because the door was not shut and they gave him a blessing. If he would have died, the case would have been closed within 12 hours because they had enough evidence to indicate he made the bombs, and that's all that matters. You don't need a motive if somebody's dead. But because he lived, they needed to have a motive why, and that's what took the investigation so long.
So I've heard there's speculation. I actually talked with Shannon Flynn, who was a good friend of Mark Hoffman, and he believes that this was really a suicide attempt. I've heard other people speculate that it might have been for Lynn Jacobs or Brent Ashworth or Metcalf.
Brent Metcalf.
So do you have any ideas who that third bomb was intended for?
Oh, yeah. It's commonly known as Brent Ashworth.
It was Brent
Ashworth.
He
knows that, too. Brent does. I wouldn't say it had he... Does he... Excuse me. He goes out and talks about it. I've been around him many times in the last several years. And the facts of the investigation, it was him. He was the one that he was due to meet at the Crossroads Mall.
At the Crossroads Mall.
See, Brent is an attorney, and he had some affiliates up at Crossroads Mall, and every Wednesday he would come down and meet with them. And he would go up to the 17th floor and meet with them. So if Mark ever wanted to meet with him, he would meet him by the escalator coming up to where the elevators were. And so he was there waiting for him, and Brent, coincidentally again, happened to come up the day before for some unknown reason. Mark actually visited him on Sunday before the bombs to make sure he was coming down there.
Oh, really?
And so Mark was waiting for him, and Brent showed up the day before. I'm reminded of the story of the three little pigs and the wolf. But and then he waited until he had a chance to come down, and when Brent didn't come down, that's when he left and went back to his car. So it was Brent.
It was Brent. Wow.
And think of the cold-blooded nature to give him a bomb as he gets in the elevator.
Oh, wow. That's terrible. Let's talk a little bit about what was in the trunk. I remember reading in the book Salamander, I believe it was, they said that you were upset because, you know, with the big fire and everything, the fire department obviously came and got a lot of the documents wet, and then they were laid out to dry, not very hygienically, I guess. Could you talk a little bit about what was in that trunk?
Well, I can tell you what I saw, because, again, I wasn't involved for another 6 weeks. But when I finally got involved in it, I went down to the police department, and they took me down. That was the old police department before they built the new building. It's where the library is now, downtown Salt Lake. And down in the basement, they had a gymnasium where they would play basketball. And as they walked in, down in the basement, spread out all over the basketball floor, was these documents drying out. And then there was another room to the side, which they kept locked, where they had file cabinets and other boxes of documents that they had taken from Hoffman. But they were all still spread out, drying out. I mean, this is 6 weeks later. They had not been inventoried. I don't know whether they ever were inventoried. I don't know. I was with the Attorney General's office. I didn't care what the police department did. All I cared is they weren't maintained properly. And I never got a chance to see everything there. They just said, well, here they are. Look around and see what you might want. And I would go in the room, for instance, and went through the file cabinet and looked at various things that were never introduced in evidence. For instance, I found some letters from Heber J. Grant. There was a whole stack of them, maybe 20, 30 of them. And, of course, Heber J. Grant was one of the presidents of the church, and it said, Dear Brother So-and-so, and that was left blank, said, I want to thank you for allowing me to stay at your house when I visited a conference. Again, we're speculating. Why did he have so many? Because he was probably going around to relatives and saying, here's a letter I found. Would you like to buy it for $100 or something like that? And we don't know how many he used. We never did the investigation. Again, there were a total of 12 or 13 of us working full-time for 16 months. We had to focus our attention on the documents that cost $1.5 million rather than the ones that he may sell for $50. If you remember, when they went to trial or when he was arrested for, I think, 2 counts of homicide, 28 counts of fraud or something. And that was modified significantly, too. Yeah.
Hmm.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with George Throckmorton. In our next conversation, we'll talk about an irate customer of Mark Hoffman's that actually roughed him up.
Just Hoffman told me it was an original. So he calls him on the phone and says, this isn't an original. He actually meets with him. He says, this is not an original document. It's not worth $100,000. I want my money back. Well, Mark doesn't have any money. And apparently an argument ensued or something, and Mark gets physically assaulted.
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please share with your friends.
Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.